College Basketball Insider.
Some news and notes from around the world of college basketball.
In studio correspondent for WFAN and CBS Sports Radio.
Attention, please, to John Rothstein. Please report to St. Joe's.
The Insider's Insider.
Joining us now with his thoughts and to break it down, John Rothstein.
It's College Hoops Today with John Rothstein.
Let's put the women and children to bed and go looking for dinner. This is the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein, coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Later in this show, we will be joined by Harvard head coach Tommy Amaker, who recently inked the best recruiting class in school history. And we are going to get back to our usual format here on the College Hoops Today podcast after previewing all the major conferences in college basketball the last 8 or 9 weeks or so. We want to remind you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast on iTunes. Give us a review. Give us a like. Let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. You can also check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook and send me your questions on Twitter. I'll get to them later in the show. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. And today's show is brought to you by Harry's. For far too long, you've either paid too much for a comfortable shave or you've settled for a low price but low quality razor. Harry's offers something you've never had before, a great shave at a fair price. Good shave, good price, it's simple. Get the best of both with Harry's. Harry's starter set is a great option. For just $15, you get a razor handle, moisturizing shave cream, and 3 of Harry's 5-blade German-engineered razors. Plus, there's a special offer for fans of the show. Harry's will give you $5 off your first purchase with promo code HOOPS. Go to harrys.com right now and look for the Truman set. That's HARRYS.com. Enter code HOOPS at checkout to get $5 off and help support the show. Stop compromising. Give Harry's a try today. And as I mentioned, Tommy Amaker, the head coach of Harvard, former Duke point guard, is going to join us in just a bit here on the College Hoops Today podcast. But the story in college basketball, and it's been one that's lingered over the last 7 or 8 weeks, has been Andrew White, the graduate transfer from Nebraska. He finally made a decision this past weekend, opting to commit to Syracuse. Again, he can play immediately without sitting out. Averaged 16.6 points a game last year with 87 made three-point shots. Now, why is this so significant? Why is Andrew White, a player who scored a lot of points and put up very good numbers on a team that did not make the NCAA tournament, such a big story right now as we get ready to start school and turn the calendar from August to September? College basketball is a unique sport because really, in my opinion, since we saw VCU and Butler both go to a Final Four in 2011, 5.5 years ago, the whole idea of how you could build a program that went deep in the NCAA tournament change, and that really brought in the casual fan. That brought in a fan that could identify with the notion that programs like I just mentioned, VCU, Butler, or Wichita State, could, with the right blend of tradition and recruiting and culture, go as far in the NCAA tournament as any blue blood program. But make no mistake about it, college basketball is always going to be more attractive, especially to people from the periphery, when its blue blood programs are playing and performing at a high level. And that is what Andrew White does for Syracuse. Syracuse, in my opinion, with the addition of Andrew White, could be a top five team in the ACC next season. And when you look right now at the dynamics surrounding Syracuse and the game today, and this is a topic that's going to be debated, I think, until the NCAA makes a rule change one way or the other. Nobody in college basketball benefited more than Syracuse with graduate transfers. They added Andrew White on Sunday. They also added, John Gillen, a point guard from Colorado State who averaged 13 points a game last season. So two of Syracuse's top probably 7 players will be players that played last season somewhere else but were eligible to play immediately without sitting out next season at Syracuse. That's something that, you know, really is an interesting dynamic, I think, when you look at the game. Because one thing that I have always been very opinionated about, and I will not waver on this notion, I don't think it's ever going to change, at least not anytime soon, but because of what we're seeing right now with graduate transfers, a player having the ability to go someplace without sitting out, college basketball right after the season, April, May, or in this case, you know, as something that extended into the latter part of summer, has become free agency. And I think, and I've said this time and time again, that we would have a much better feel and a much more controlled situation in terms of transfers and players leaving schools or not leaving schools if all kids had to sit a year with when they decided to transfer. Because here's something you have to look at. People who don't believe in that notion will make the statement that, let's be honest with ourselves right now, if you are a college graduate, you have earned the right to transfer someplace and explore a master's program without sitting out. But how many of these kids do you really think, do you really believe, are making these decisions based on what they want to do with their education? They're not doing that. They want to be in a situation where they can help their basketball brand as much as they can. It's no secret. John Gillen of Colorado State was an off-the-radar player who put up good numbers. At Syracuse right now in the ACC, he's a national name. Andrew White, okay, was at Nebraska. He wanted to be an NBA player. He wanted to play on a bigger stage. He went to Syracuse. He'll play in the Carry Dome, but play for a Hall of Fame coach in Jim Boeheim. But for the people out there that really believe that graduate transfers should be able to transfer and not sit out without having to have the penalty of sitting for 1 year, ask yourself this question. Do you think that these kids are making decisions based on academics? And if you do want to, you know, give them the benefit of the doubt, then this is something you have to remember. Anybody involved with collegiate athletics will tell you that master's programs, especially if you're a student athlete, take normally at least 2 years to complete. If academics is such a priority and you want to rationalize that, then a kid shouldn't have a problem sitting out the first year he transfers after he graduated somewhere else and then playing the second year. We would have less anarchy, we would have less turnover in our sport, okay, and there would be less of a transfer epidemic, in my opinion, if all transfers had to sit a year. And the sooner that happens, the better this game and everything around the game will be in college basketball. Because now what you're starting to see is there are guys at the mid-major level, okay, that are putting up big numbers and they've already transferred and they're at their second school. And now, because they've had to sit a year, whether they transferred after a year or 2 years, those kids are going on the market and the high major programs are poaching those kids because they can help their team. So it's not just about high major kids leaving and exploring other high major situations. We now have a situation where you're seeing people at the high major level look at these mid-major players who put up big numbers as found money. There's a kid, Malcolm Bernard, who was at Florida A&M, who wasn't on a winning team, but came on the market as an immediate eligible transfer. He initially committed to Richmond. Things didn't work out there academically. He went back on the market. He committed to a top five team in Xavier because Xavier obviously thinks he can help him. Put up big numbers. Temple was also recruiting him. It's anarchy. There's no other way to describe it. It's anarchy and it's an epidemic. And if the NCAA would eliminate graduate transfers, you would see less anarchy. And that's just a fact of life. And to the people that want to rationalize, if somebody is a college graduate, that they have the opportunity to really move on someplace and not have to sit out, if that's the argument you want to make, just ask yourself this. Do you think that those kids are making decisions based on a graduate programs? And if you are, if you want to make that argument and you want to convince yourself of that, then you have to remember this. The graduate programs that most of these kids are going to entertain and most of these kids are going to pursue, if they finish it, a lot of them don't finish it, normally takes 2 years to complete. All things you have to consider. Now, for guys like Andrew White and John Gillen, this is what the system is. Maximize your value. Hey, you both went to Syracuse. You went to a top 10 program in the country. You're playing for a Hall of Fame coach. You're playing in the Carrier Dome. You're playing in the ACC. Good for you. But if you don't think that this is a problem right now in our sport, you're nuts. You're absolutely nuts. All transfers should have to sit a year. Period. End of discussion. Now, the system is what the system is, and I don't think that's changing anytime soon. And what has the system yielded for Syracuse? in my opinion, a legitimate dog in the ACC fight, because now they have another guy who can score the ball on Andrew White. And I think when push comes to shove, in end-of-game situations, Syracuse is going to be really hard to guard, because they're either going to have John Gillen, the kid from Colorado State who I've talked about, or Franklin Howard at point guard. You're going to have Andrew White on a wing. You're going to have Tyus Battle, the freshman from New Jersey, on a wing. And then I think you'll see Jim Boeheim use Tyler Roberson and Tyler Lydon up front. That's a good team. That's a top 20 team in America. Harvard is not a top 20 team in America, but the Crimson are on an upward trajectory after a down season last year. Tommy Amaker has inked the best recruiting class in school history. He joins us next on the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. This is a different type of offseason for Harvard. The Crimson are not used to coming off a year where they didn't play in the NCAA tournament. Tommy Amaker led Harvard to NCAA tournament appearances between 2012 and 2015. And now the face of the Harvard basketball program joins the College Hoops Today podcast. And Coach, before we get into your program, what was it like a couple of weeks ago watching your mentor Mike Krzyzewski win another gold medal at the Olympics in Rio?
Well, John, how neat and wonderful, you know, to see the U.S. team win in so many of the sports in the Olympics, and how well all the teams were able to do in Rio, and then obviously specifically specifically basketball with Coach K. You know, obviously, you know what he means to me and my connection and relationship with Coach, and just talked to him just yesterday, actually. And we talked a lot about it, and it was just so neat to hear his voice and how excited and proud he was, and to wrap his tenure up as 10 years for him to have, 76 games and wins in a row and three gold medals. I mean, that's unbelievable. So happy for him, and so happy certainly for USA Basketball.
You know, you spent obviously a lot more time around Coach than I have, but in my dealings with him, one of the things that he has always consistently said is you have to be ready to adapt and adapt with the times. Since you've really seen him since when you were a high school kid till now, how do you think he's really changed over the years and through his evolution as a coach?
Well, you know, there's a great saying, and Nelson Mandela, you know, he's coined a number of sayings, and as wise and as smart and brilliant as he has been throughout the years and during his life. But he coined a phrase called, you can change tactics without changing principles. Mm-hmm. I think that's the beauty of who he is. His principles are the same. And he's never going to compromise or negotiate on his principles. But I do think, you know, you use the word adapt. But I just think changing his tactics and, you know, staying up with today's culture, today's times. I mean, he has a very young staff. I think that's something he'll probably, you know, talk a lot about. They keep him young as well, and they're in tune to what's going on in the world and how things, you know, relate to the younger generation. And he's interested in that. I think we actually talked just the other day, you know, just how much, you know, he's a life learner. You know, he didn't say that, but I'm saying it. And that's the kind of person he is. He's curious. He's constantly trying to get better and to learn. And so being a life learner is a very healthy thing. And I think he really prides himself on that. And I just think that's why he's as good as he is and has been able to communicate through the years with all different, you know, walks of life and different generations and different decades. And I think people really respond and respect him for that.
You know, you use the term learner. I'm curious, what's the biggest thing that you learned from him as both a player and as a coach?
Well, you know, he's incredibly prepared. You know, Coach is a leader. You know, the thing that I'm trying to emulate, you know, from him, and I've said this about him so much. I said, he teaches, he leads, and he serves. And if I could do those three things anywhere in the same ballpark, you know, that he's doing them and has done them, then I'm doing really well. To teach, to lead, and to serve are three powerful concepts and words, and I can't think of anyone that has done that better than he has. And so, you know, in order to do those things, you know, being prepared to do those things, to communicate, I mean, he does those as well as anyone. He loves what he's doing. He's passionate about teaching and coaching. I think you see that's why he's done it for so many years. And I'm just trying to see if there's a way that I can possibly communicate. I think when you're a great communicator, you have the ability to connect. And I think he does that, again, as well as anyone.
Well, communicating is something I'm sure something that you and he did before you took the post at Harvard. You had been a head coach at Seton Hall, went to the Sweet 16. You were the head coach at Michigan. Take us inside the dialogue that you and Coach had about going a different route and becoming the head coach at a place like Harvard.
Yeah, you know, he's the guy that I run everything up his flagpole to see what he thinks and how he feels Coach is not only a smart guy, he's a very wise guy, and wisdom. I love having a chance to run things by him because of his wisdom. So I obviously would want to his input and see what he thinks. And he was at the very first of this, I thought he was, not sure because of it's so different, in terms of what I've been used to in terms of the resources of things that you're going to have that you normally would have that are regular things in the other positions, the other jobs, the other leagues. And so I thought that was a concern. But I think he really felt, for me, he knows this about me, that it's important that I believe in something. I'm not just taking a position or taking a job. I really need to believe in it. And I think he really felt that, that I had that feeling about this. And I think that once he was hearing that in me, in my voice, in my heart, I think he really felt that there would have been something that would work for me and for us. And I've been really fortunate and blessed that it has to this point. But his counsel, and his wisdom is always greatly appreciated.
Well, and, there's somebody who's going to need counsel and wisdom at some point over time, and that's the person who follows him at Duke. What advice would you give the person who follows Mike Krzyzewski and follows a guy that won, at least 5 national championships and 3 Olympic gold medals?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure that there is any advice. I think what he's always taught all of us to do is no matter what, when we are moving on to different places and respective jobs, I'm sure if you have a conversation with Chris Collins or Steve Wojciechowski or Johnny Dawkins or any of the coaches, Mike Bray, anybody that has Quinn Snyder has worked for him and has gone on and they're doing still coaching now, he's always said to make sure that you be yourself. And it was an amazing boost of confidence, that when he said that to me when I left to go to Seton Hall, you're not here anymore. You need to be who you are. Be yourself. Be true to yourself. And I would say that to anybody that's going any position. But to have any kind of advice trying to go follow him, I'm not sure that there's anybody can give some words of wisdom for that. I mean, you think about what he's accomplished and how he's done it and the way he's done it, it's unprecedented.
Well, I know that you're obviously only wrapped up in building Harvard and making Harvard, a stronger brand in basketball than it's become, but have you in your own private thoughts ever allowed yourself to think about that, to being his successor?
John, I haven't, and that's very, very honest and true. I'm very happy here, and I would welcome the opportunity to sign up for being here at Harvard for forever. When we first came here, I've never wanted to go any place that I didn't think that I could be there forever if the situation worked out on either side of that, for my decision, to be here forever. And so, we're very comfortable with that thought and concept here, and I haven't allowed myself to think beyond that, because we've worked so hard to try to position ourselves here to grow our brand, to increase awareness, become relevant, to work hard to become a championship team and not just win championships. And we've been really proud and pleased, that we've been on that track. So to think of anything other than those things wouldn't be healthy for me, and nor would it be fair to our staff and our kids. And the only time it ever, comes up is when someone would ask. And that's the only time in terms of comes up in my mind.
Harvard head coach Tommy Amaker joining John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. Well, we have touched upon the brand that you've built at Harvard, but last season was a trying season. You lost your best player, Siani Chambers, your point guard, before the year with a torn ACL. And for the first time, you weren't playing meaningful games in late February in probably 5 or 6 years. What was it like to go through that?
Well, you know, they're all meaningful. I understand, you know, your thought of kind of describing that, but they're all are very, very meaningful for a variety of different reasons and ways. But having said that, you know, it was a different year for us. You know, we knew coming into this past season that we were going to be different because of all the pieces to the puzzle that we've had in the past that had graduated: Wesley Saunders, Steve Mondumisi, and Kenyatta Smith, Jonah Travis. I mean, we had a crew of guys here that were here for a while, and they were they had historic, you know, numbers, you know, during their time here at Harvard, and in terms of their winning and all the wonderful things they were able to accomplish for our program and our school. And then we had the other kind of the additional unforeseen kind of blow that happened, which was losing Siani, and you mentioned that. So that was a very, very tough pill to swallow. We got out of the blocks, did a wonderful job early. I thought we managed things well, played really well out in the played in the Diamond Head Classic out in Hawaii, and it was wonderful, you know, moments there, losing to Oklahoma in the championship game of that tournament. And, you know, then we just kind of, you know, we weren't as good as we would have liked to have been throughout the rest of the year. We weren't as consistent as we needed to be. We had young players, and they did a great job for us. But as young guys can do, it's hard to sustain a certain level of consistency. And so now, as we are, you know, looking back and looking forward, we think with you know, the nucleus, those guys returning, with Big Zena returning, you know, with Corey Johnson and Tommy McCarthy and, you know, Chris Egge, different guys, Corbin Miller, you know, that we have back now as really seasoned older guys, and adding some new guys into the mix, you know, we're anxious and optimistic about the future. But you know, last year was a tough year, but you know, we're looking at that as an enormous growth opportunity for us, and if we can use it right this year, John, then it could have served us very well as we continue to go down this path and this journey.
Well, and obviously a lot of that's going to hinge on the health of Siani Chambers. If you can, please give us an update and his prognosis here as we inch closer and closer to fall practice.
Yeah, you know, we're going to be very cautious with him, but he is on schedule and probably ahead of schedule. You know, he's healthy, he's working out, he's playing. You know, these guys are, you know, with their pickup stuff, and but you know, we're going to be cautious with him. You know, it's all the way around the clock for a full year for him to have been out, and he's chomping at the bit. Our job is to make sure that we're you know, pacing him the right way of with his injury and his conditioning, and you know, but he is healthy, and that's a wonderful word to be able to use, is, you know, to be healthy, and we feel that way about Siani. Our training staff, you know, with him and the work he's put in, so we're just going to make sure that we take him slowly as we go along, but we're not doing that for any reason other than just trying to be smart for the long haul, not only for this season, but for his rest of his career as an athlete, and he wants to play beyond Harvard.
Well, and, you know, obviously if you're going to do things for the long haul too, in terms of make another run in March, you need more than one good player. And there's more than one good player in this historic recruiting class that you've signed. You've signed 4 4-star kids and 4 kids who are ranked in the top 100 of most recruiting services. How would you describe the magnitude of this class, and what does it tell you about where the program has risen to?
Well, we're, as you can probably imagine, we're thrilled, you know, with these incoming kids and all of them. We're able to, you know, the brand of Harvard is very attractive and is very powerful, and that's our institution. You know, we've been able to, you know, hopefully, you know, build on that a little bit with our basketball brand, our basketball program. And so I think kids are seeing this as a, you know, as an opportunity that is really, really intriguing. And we've been fortunate to get a group here right now that are starting here. We start class this week, and, you know, everyone's on campus. And so, you know, to get these kids here, and we're excited about them. I think they're worthy of, you know, what they've been labeled as, and you know, their awards and distinctions and all the things that they've gathered through their high school careers, and you know, it's been warranted. And now this is a different step, a different level, and now we need to help them grow and learn. And there'll be a lot of, you know, potholes and speed bumps along the way, you know, for their, especially the initial stages of this. That's what it's normally like for a kid transitioning into college. But we think over the long haul, John, we think we have a class that's very promising. If they continue to have the great attitudes that they have, and continue to work hard like they have in the past, we think there's no reason why these kids won't have a tremendous impact here at Harvard and beyond, and with basketball.
If you were the head coach at Seton Hall or Michigan and you were evaluating these four players, would you feel comfortable offering them a scholarship and saying, you know, this kid's going to impact the program in the Big East or the Big Ten?
Absolutely. I mean, those programs were recruiting these kids some of these kids who we have here. So they actually were doing it now, and certainly if I were at other places, those places you mentioned, my previous coaching stops, I would have clearly been interested in these kids, you know, from their on and off the court abilities.
Harvard head coach Tommy Amaker joining John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. The Crimson will welcome the top recruiting class in the history of the school. And Tommy, you've won games in the NCAA tournament multiple times. You've gotten Harvard to the NCAA tournament, obviously, and now people are expecting that to be an annual tradition. But if there's one thing you haven't done so far at Harvard, it's have a one-and-done player. Now, I know you can't talk about anything specifically, but if you're going into a living room right now and you're making a pitch about being a one-and-done player that goes to Harvard, what is it?
Well, you know, we've been involved with kids that have – a lot of the kids that we have now in the incoming class, I mean, they have aspirations of being professional basketball players, being NBA players, and that's wonderful, and we want that. You know, one of the interesting things that we always talk about is that just can't be your only, you know, hope or dream, no matter what kid we're interested in recruiting. And we also know that we don't have a crystal ball, you know, to predict if someone is going to want to leave, you know, XYZ institution or school prior to their normal graduation time. It happens all over, and not just in the world of sports or basketball. We've had a number of people who've come to Harvard and have pursued their deep passion for something else, whether that's a Matt Damon in acting, or whether that's a Bill Gates and with Microsoft, or whether that's Mark Zuckerberg with starting Facebook, or, you know, there are many people that have, you know, have decided to pursue, you know, their dreams and their passions, you know, and leave school or decide to come back at a later time. And so we don't shy away from that. I mean, we want people who belong here, and we want people that we think are going to make us very proud as time goes on. And if it happens to be that you can, you know, maybe do some of that, you know, by playing in a game of basketball, or hitting a tennis ball, as James Blake has, you know, has done, or anybody else. I mean, it's we've been able to attract game-changing people to this institution. But we all say we don't have a crystal ball to predict the future, you know, what that's going to mean, you know, from one year to the next. We just want the right kids who we feel are worthy and belonging of being at this school. And then we want to be a part of that narrative, that story, of whatever that story is going to become. But we certainly want Harvard to be a part of it.
Well, you say you don't have a crystal ball, but we know how things happen in sports. Once one person does something, a domino effect can follow. If you can get one major prospect to commit, and he's a one-and-done type talent, do you think that annually you'll be able to regularly compete for one-and-dones and compete with Mike Krzyzewski and compete with John Calipari for the best of the best each and every year because of what Harvard can offer somebody for the next four decades after?
Well, John, you know, we're going to, as I said, we're going to try to look, you know, and attract the kids that, you know, we think really fit this profile, fit this institution. And if they do, we're going to try to recruit them. I mean, that's my job, and that's and we hope that, you know, they're going to be as good as they can be in their respective areas, whether that's, you know, economics, drama, music, whatever it may be, engineering, basketball, but if they happen to fit the profile of our school, we want to be a part of those stories and those narratives. And it happens to be that kids are talented enough to do all those things that we deem necessary to come here and become professional basketball players. Why would we ever not want to be a part of that story? If they belong here, they belong here. And basketball is just, you know, one of the pieces that can help them be who they are. We love that. You know, we love those stories. And if we could attract other kids that fit the profile, we're all for it.
You know, we look at the history that you've made at Harvard in basketball, and I think, you know, you made a major step in 2013 and 14 when you won two games in the NCAA tournament. But I know from talking to you that the loss you had against North Carolina, because it was so close and because of the power of the Tar Heels brand, stung for a very long time. As you reflect, as we all do, on the highs and lows of being the head coach at Harvard, do you think about those two wins over a great New Mexico team and a great Cincinnati team as much as you think about the Carolina loss?
Yeah, I think most coaches and maybe most, you know, people, you kind of find yourself gravitating toward those close moments that you missed, you know, whatever they are in your respective worlds. It's a great saying that if we magnified, you know, our wins or, you know, our moments of happiness as much as we magnify our losses or our moments of despair, you know, we would be a much happier person if we did that. We tend to magnify those areas of loss or areas of you know, moments, as we're referring to right now, the close loss to North Carolina, that hangs with you. It's just one of those what could have been moments, and you know how fragile and fine of a line it is. When will you possibly maybe be fortunate enough, blessed enough to get another moment or an opportunity like that? May never come again. And you know, as you mentioned, the brand of North Carolina basketball, you know, that's at the top of the food chain. I mean, that's there with, you know, the Dukes and the Kentuckys, and so it doesn't get much better than that. And so for us to take a swing at that and come very, very close, it's very hard. There's no doubt about it. But that's what keeps us moving and working and grinding and passionate about, you know, trying to put ourselves in a position for another opportunity that that we can somehow get one day.
Well, and to do that in 2017, you're going to have to go through a team that I think is being vastly underrated, you know, heading into next season, and that's Princeton. Because when I look at some of the great Ivy League teams that have made runs in the NCAA tournament, whether it's Steve Donahue's team at Cornell in 2010 or some of your teams, I think Princeton has the requisites to reflect some of those teams we've seen in the past. As somebody who's coached against that team a couple of times last season, what are your impressions of the Tigers?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, John, and I think it's a reflection not only of Princeton right now, but also of our league. I think our league is vastly underrated. I think we're getting a little bit more recognition, you know, with I think this tremendous year Yale had last year. I think it, you know, kind of made people realize it's not just Harvard, you know, that's had some success in this conference. I think because we had kind of won a few in a row, that it may have had the perception that it was just us. And I think that was kind of the narrative there for the average person or the average fan for a while. And even some media members, I think that what Yale has been able to do has strengthened our conference and our league from the perception of how deep it is and how good it is. And I agree with you looking forward to this year when you think of, you know, a team that could be a monster team. And I think they should get the nod and deservedly so, the team that should kind of in the preseason polls anyway to win our conference for this season. They return everyone. Mitch has done a tremendous job there, you know, with the Princeton program. We were fortunate enough to kind of catch them and clip them right at the end in a nail-biter game toward the end of the year this past year. Otherwise, it would have looked like it was going to be another down-to-the-wire playoff kind of game, you know, for the Ivy League, maybe with a Yale and Princeton. But we caught caught them right at the end in a game that we were fortunate to win, that they had a shot to win at the tied at the buzzer and missed it. So, you know, I think that they're really good. I think that they return all of their significant players in terms of their minutes and production from a year ago. And I'm quite sure that they're going to be very hungry with the crew that they have to have this kind of opportunity in front of them. So I'm glad you mentioned it, because I do think that they're worthy of that kind of discussion.
Well, and the thing now with the Ivy League is you can be a dominant team in the regular season and still have to go through the anxiety that every mid-major program is going to have in March because of the Ivy League conference tournament with an automatic bid. How does that change the league?
You know, we're the last one to take the dive into that world with having a postseason conference tournament, and it's going to be quite different. You know, we had a strong tradition of the regular season champion winning our conference, being awarded the NCAA tournament bid, and certainly that has seemed to have worked well, for a number of teams, a number of years. And then whenever you had those ties, you had the playoff game, and that would determine, as we participated in a couple of those over the last few years ourselves. So I do think it's going to be a different dynamic. You know, the top four teams in our league are going to be awarded the opportunity to play for the championship. It's going to be at the Palestra in Philadelphia. And so the regular season, obviously it's going to be very meaningful. We're hopeful that it can, expand our league in terms of other postseason opportunities. If a regular season champion, doesn't win the conference champion like other leagues. So it's going to be different. I'm anxious to see how it all plays out and see how we feel about it going forward. But this is the inaugural year of it, and it seems to be a lot of enthusiasm and excitement surrounding our league because of a number of things, but certainly because of us having a conference tournament as well.
Harvard head coach Tommy Amaker joining John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. You know, Tommy, you mentioned the potential for expanded postseason opportunities. And obviously, you can be a great regular season team in the Ivy League now and not go to the NCAA tournament. I'm curious, if you continue to recruit at the level you're recruiting, and I know you've been very meticulous with your non-conference schedule, do you think you would consider augmenting the competition level in an effort to put together an at-large resume in case you don't play your best basketball in March over the next couple of seasons?
I think it's very important that we are discussing and looking and analyzing all different angles and aspects, of scheduling, as you just mentioned, to try to position us as best we can at the end of the year. I think as we're going forward, certain things have been locked in, obviously, for this upcoming season, but as we're going forward this year and the following year from now, we have to do that. I think that's fair, and I think that's important to try to position ourselves to be the best that we can be and be thought of as a team worthy of postseason consideration if we don't win our postseason conference tournament. And so how do you do that? As you just mentioned, your scheduling, the kind of games you need to play, but more importantly, the kind of games you need to win. And so we're trying to see how we need to play that out and see how that's going to could affect a lot of us in our league. And certainly we're looking at that as well.
Obviously, to be in that situation to play in the postseason, you need your returning players to get better, and you need your incoming freshmen to produce at a relatively high level. Who of your returning players do you think will make the biggest jump next season?
Well, we do have a strong nucleus returning, led by, our big man, Big Z, Zena Dosunmu. So Zena is, he's a double-double guy that, we're counting on in that regard. He's all-conference player, second-team all-league player for us this past year, led our league in rebounding. He's a front-court player, 6'9". He's a senior. We are certainly counting on Zena to be a presence for us on both ends. And we love to have a balanced team, and we certainly think that he can give us a balance, especially, in the paint around the rim with his size and his power and his rebounding ability. And then obviously, with Siani Chambers returning after being out away for a knee injury, and so having him back. We talk about Corbin Miller, who's a senior for us this year, who's an experienced guard, that's been a good shooter in our program. We've had some younger players You know, that we feel like it's a big year for that. Chris Eggie, you know, who is a junior for us this year. So we're just hopeful that, you know, all the players, that's been the key for us through the years, John, is that we've had growth and development within the program, regardless of who we're bringing in. And we're excited about, you know, kids who are coming in. We talked about that earlier. But the key is always what kind of growth and development are we showing within the program? These returning guys, you know, when they get older and they start to blossom and gain confidence and get opportunities and, you know, mature here and there a little bit more and more. So we're excited about those guys, the Eggies, the, you know, Corey Johnsons, the Tommy McCarthys, those two kids who were freshmen last year and played and started. And, you know, we relied on them too much. As young players, but we're anxious to see, you know, is that going to spill over into growth and development throughout their time now? And I'm anxious to see that play out for us this year.
Well, you just went through all the returning guys you have. We spent time talking about the freshmen that you're bringing in. I'm not talking about best team because we don't know yet, as Coach K would say. I think he said once that just because you put on your jersey and it has a name in front of it, it doesn't make you a team. We don't know how this team is going to be. But when you look at the roster, pound for pound, inch for inch, is this the most talented roster that you've had at Harvard?
You know, I would have to say that our 2013 team, in all honesty, could have been, you know, our most talented team. You know, we had a little bit more, I would think, you know, veteran players on that roster, the Kyle Caseys, the Brandon Currys, the Keith Wrights. I mean, we had a crew of guys that year that. We felt that was very, very talented. And, you know, this team could be. It's hard for me to say that in all honesty at this point. But give me a little time. You know, I think as we go through the fall and, you know, the preseason area, you know, preseason time, before we play. But on paper, I can see how people could come to that conclusion. But I'm hesitant to complete that sentence right now. But I do think it has the potential to be, for sure.
All right, final thing for me, Tommy. You have always said that your program remains committed to three things internally: your identity, your standard, and your goals, and that expectations is an external word. How do you keep expectations as an external word when you're recruiting at a level that's far superior than everybody else in the Ivy League?
Well, you know, I understand, you know, the thoughts that, you know, people could have, and we're excited about, you know, all the things that we feel that are most important to us, as always. And so we are consistent with that, John. I think more than anything else, we're very consistent with that thought, that belief. You know, we've had that same thought and belief when, you know, when the thought and the belief is on the outside has been, hey, they're going to be terrible. You know, but our thought and belief has, you know, has been these three things: our identity, our goals, and our standards. And we are comfortable with whatever the outcome will be, regardless of the thoughts of anyone outside of our program. We're comfortable internally if we can live up to those three categories that we hold the highest and the dearest to us. And so it's just a matter of being consistent. It's a matter of, you know, being focused on what's important for us. And not, you know, getting caught up in listening to all the things that are being said around us. And it's harder. It's harder now when the things are being said that are somewhat positive, or, you know, who doesn't want to hear good things said about them, or who doesn't want to hear, you know, the predictions that it's going to be incredibly, you know, rosy or, you know, wonderful types of thoughts. Who doesn't want to hear that? You're a human being. That's human nature. But we've been consistent with that, as you mentioned. You know, that word expectation is always an external word, and we are so focused on all the internal words, concepts, and it's up to us as a staff, you know, to see if we can make sure that we are constantly, consistently driving that home. And with a large incoming young crew, and we'll be, you know, we'll have a roster here that we're trying to become a team. But, you know, we're youthful in a lot of areas too. And so it's going to be hard, but it's up to us to see if we can stay consistent. And when we've done that, it's been really healthy. You know, that's the other word we've used before, and that's been healthy for us to conduct our program and run our program in that manner.
Well, Tommy, it's going to be a lot of fun to cover. Thank you for your time. I know how busy you are with the start of school, and hope we can visit in Cambridge in October during practice.
But it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for asking and having me. Thank you very much.
We'd like to thank Harvard head coach Tommy Amaker for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Want to remind you to subscribe to us on iTunes and give us a review, give us a like, let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also, check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Twitter. It's time now for the social media portion of the podcast, and you can send me your questions at John Rothstein on Twitter. That's John, J-O-N. And our first question right now comes from Max, and it's John, will Rhode Island be a top 25 team next season? Max, I think Rhode Island is on the cusp of being a top 25 team, a team that, in my opinion, should compete for an Atlantic 10 championship. The sleeper you want to keep an eye on at Rhode Island, and I saw this a couple of weeks ago in a summer workout, Indiana transfer Stanford Robinson. He gives Dan Hurley's team a dimension off the bench that they haven't had in past year. The next question comes from Brad, and it's John. I know it's early, but what mid-major team do you really like to have a good year? Well, Gonzaga, I think, is beyond a mid-major team in the eyes of many when it comes to college basketball, but I do think Mark Few's team is going to be absolutely sensational this year. Others right now on my list, you have to like Monmouth with what they bring back. You have to like Princeton and St. Mary's with what they bring back, and don't sleep on UAB in Conference USA. Another question right now from our good friend David Dalton, and he says, John, I'm a Kentucky fan, but Duke looks like a clear number one. Your thoughts on how Coach K will handle all the wealth that he has on his roster? And David, my answer to that is simple, and I've said this time and time again. I think that the Olympic experience and having to manage all these professional guys and all these professional egos has made Mike Krzyzewski better suited to handle a team like he's going to have this year. Now, he didn't obviously need training in terms of how to handle teams with a lot of talent, but when you look at Duke's roster and you think about the names on this team, Grayson Allen, Luke Kennard, Emile Jefferson, Harry Giles, Jason Tatum, some of the best names in college basketball, there is no doubt that the Olympic experience is going to help Coach K with a roster this talented. Some other now news and notes around college basketball. I was in Gainesville, Florida last week, taking part in a great clinic put together by former Wyoming head coach and former Florida assistant coach Larry Scheidt, now with the Dallas Mavericks. And I got a chance to visit with Florida staff. And here's something you want to keep an eye on when you look at Florida's non-conference schedule. Florida has not made the NCAA tournament in 2 years, since 2014. And due to renovations at the O'Connell Center, Florida will not have a non-conference true home game until December 21st. That is a tough deal for Mike White in his second game in Gainesville. A recruiting update right now. Five-star point guard Nick Weatherspoon told me on Saturday that he will take an official visit to Mississippi State on September the 9th. I have learned from multiple sources that Weatherspoon will attend either Mississippi State or NC State. Quindari Weatherspoon, the brother of Nick Weatherspoon, is Mississippi State's best player. He lives about 90 minutes away from the Starkville campus. Got a chance to visit with Tad Boyle, the head coach of Colorado, when I was in Gainesville for the clinic I mentioned earlier. And I'm telling you, the more and more I hear about this team, the more and more I'm convinced that Colorado will be a major factor in the Pac-12. Tad Boyle told me that Xavier Johnson, their versatile forward, has been cleared for all basketball-related activities. And again, if you're not going to have one-and-done guys in college basketball, you better be old. Colorado boasts 4 fifth-year seniors. I was going over some numbers last week, and I saw a great stat on Seton Hall, and I know Seton Hall made major waves last year from Isaiah Whitehead's performance late in the season, especially offensively in the Big East tournament, but for Seton Hall, it was all about defense. And last season, when Seton Hall held its opponents to 65 points or less, the Pirates were 15-0. That's a nugget for you. Final thing, if you're looking for under-the-radar transfers in the Big 12, look no further than Baylor's Manu LeCompte. The Miami transfer has earned the love and the praise of the Baylor staff. This will be Scott Drew's point guard, in my opinion, as a starter for the next two seasons. Again, want to thank Harvard head coach Tommy Amaker for joining the College Hoops Today podcast. We will be back, same bat time, same bat channel next week, as well as the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein.